So let's do this. We're learning the Hakdama of the Sefer Achinuch. And I think this is going to be like, we're going to try to do various Hakdamas. This is, seems to be the way we've been going over here, is Hakdamas, because Hakdamas give you a certain Hashgafa. That's the best way to describe it. What does the word Hashgafa mean? Certain words get lost in like jargon. People say hashgafa, 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 yeshivish hashgafa, mizrahi hashgafa, chassidish hashgafa, litvish hashgafa. What's hashgafa? Hashgafa is basically the word. I don't know where the term comes from. I know where Hashem uses it. It's a pasuk, hashgifa mimon kachecha. Hashem is on the lookout for Klal Yisrael. But Hashgafa is like your world outlook. So essentially in Hakdamas, you get Hashgafa, because when someone writes a Sefer, especially a very central Sefer, like we read the all the Hakdamas of the Ramban al Torah, which is so central to the outlook of the Ramban, because it's a Hakdama to the actual Sifrei Chumash, it's going to be a very important outlook. And we learned a lot about Hashras Hashchina, and that was a major focus that the Ramban taught us about. If we're going to learn eventually, hopefully, we'll learn the Hakdama of the Rambam to Mishneh Torah, we're going to get a good education in Hashgafa on what Torah Shebaal Peh is. The Rambam writing an entire Sefer, codifying all of Jewish law. So his Hakdama is going to be very essential and very overarching and give us the basic Hashgafas that we need. And it's the same thing here with the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch is a Sefer HaMitzvos. It's an unusual one. It was very influenced by the Rambam, even though it's much later. We don't know exactly who wrote it. We believe the Ra'ah wrote it. But you're going to find in his Hakdama very important hashkafas, messages to us, what he wants us to know. So this is not just, you know, studying Hakdamas for the sake of Hakdamas. It's really to get a real proper outlook on fundamentals. This has been something that I've wanted to do for a long time. I was talking about it with the guys, like what we call Jewish fundamentals. And the way we get fundamentals is, one of the ways is going through Hakdamas. So let's start. Do you have a text? Do you guys have a text? Did they give you one? They didn't give anyone one? Does anybody have one?
Yeah, they sent it out on the chat. Zevi did.
Oh, they do? Shalom, if you look, there's a chat.
Which one? Someone... The Shirim chat? Not on that chat. No, Shalom, I'm only on the alumni chat.
Shalom, if you send me an email or give me a number, I could send it to you. However best to send it to you.
Okay, I'm going to WhatsApp you right now.
See, look at this. We're mamish making moves as we speak. The Sefer Achinuch is traveling from Yerushalayim, zevik@gmail.com, to Shalom Fuchs, a budding... Actually, already a Talmud Chacham, Baruch Hashem. And it's all happening here on this Erev Shabbos Shir. So let's do it.
Okay, I got it.
The Sefer Achinuch Sakdama. Ula Yachshov Ma'ayin B'Sefer Zesh Mechabro Kibetz Kol Dinov B'Yegio B'Tuviyuno B'Divrei. One second. Oh, I think it's actually, yeah. We actually have two Hakdamas. I'm going to do the second.
If Rabbi starting with Ulai, it's there's a break. It's I think two pages in.
So I'm not going to start with Ulai, because that's called Igeres Rabbeinu. Hakdamas Rabbeinu is where it says Ha'emes Ha'borer B'min Enoshi. This is the real Hakdam over here. Ha'emes ha'bar b'minei noishi, hu mashi, skima lav das rov b'nei adam sheba olam. There seems to be an accepted concept among mankind. Right now, the Sefer HaChinuch is not talking about Judaism. He's talking about certain norms that are in mankind, right? What we call Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz literally means the way of the land. I mean, of course, it means to be a mensch, but really what Derech Eretz can mean in all contexts is the way of the land. That's why Derech Eretz also means commerce. Anything that has to do with the way the world functions is Derech Eretz. So there is an accepted concept in the world that is accepted by all. That we use testimony to validate things. Again, he's not coming from a Jewish perspective of the fact that the pasuk says al pishnayim edim yakum davar. He's coming from a secular perspective, and that's important because sometimes when you want to understand something, you have to understand it like a guy. What I mean to say is the following. The rules and regulations of the Torah, if you want to look at them objectively, sometimes you have to take yourself out of being Jewish. I know that's hard to do, Meir, because you love chalent and kishka and bagels and lox. But sometimes you have to know how to think like a guy and sort of look at the Torah from an outside perspective. That's the beauty of the Sefer Kuzari. I don't know whether this story happens or not. Even if it did or didn't, it's clear that Rav Yehuda HaLevi chose to write a Sefer with a dialogue with a guy who was searching for a religion. The reason is because when things are done to explain them on a global level, you get a more objective perspective on what Hashem is doing over here, which is a very important point. Sometimes we don't realize that when we're making an argument, we're just using hanachas of the Torah itself. Over history, there have been great debates. One of the most famous debates was the one between Ramban and Pablo Cristiani, maybe once in our great new place for this type of work. We'll learn the debate of the Ramban and Pablo Cristiani because it's actually written up in Kisvei HaRamban, maybe, I don't know. But the Ramban has to debate a Christian and support the Torah. Now, what happens when you do that is you end up with things that are much more objective. And that's always a higher level. So it could be that that's why the Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi chose to write his book as a play between a Chacham and a non-Jew who's looking at all religions. So over here, he starts his Sefer by saying what's accepted by humanity. And what's accepted by humanity is that testimony is something that validates. Uberabosa me'idin, and the more testimonies you have, al davar she'idu alav, azi samidin yosir ben ishoma. The way it works is the more people have seen something, the more it validates that thing. Ubiyosa me'idin mu'atim, yiboksa safik b'davar lepichim. And the lesser amount of testimony there is, there could always be those who are doubters. Sammy Weingarten has entered, Rav Losai. So that's for example, that George Washington was the first president of the United States. Why do we believe such a thing? Maybe there's a conspiracy theory over here. The answer is because so many people have documented it that it would be very far-fetched to deny its validity. On the other hand, there is a group of people, maybe some of the worldly people could tell me about this, I don't know about it so much, about whether or not Neil Armstrong actually landed on the moon. Have you guys been aware of there's such a conspiracy theory? Aviel, you've heard of such a thing that people wonder if he ever went? Anybody here? You can just tell me.
The Rosh Yeshiva talked about it in a Munavad.
Oh, he did? What did he say?
He said that some people that don't believe that Matan Torah happened And then he tied it into, we have all these stuff that happened in our times that people don't believe that happened, like the Holocaust and the moon landing.
Okay, so I want to go to the, I want to just focus on the landing on the moon. I'll tell you why. The landing on the moon actually had very few Edim. The Holocaust had a lot of Edim. So I don't know if the Holocaust, for what I'm trying to do, is a good example. But I actually believe that it's possible to be suspect of, during the, you know, the Russians, there was a big race, between the Russians and the United States, the space race. And there could have been an agenda to simulate or pretend that someone landed on the moon. And how many people really saw it? I mean, everyone was sitting at their television set. As Neil Armstrong said, one small step for man, one giant step for mankind, which is really an incredible quote. You need, when you stand on the moon, you need a good zug. If you, you don't have a good zug when you get on the moon, there's a problem. But that's a good zug. Small step for man, one giant step for mankind. But if somebody would tell us that it didn't happen, it would be really cool. But I don't think that it would blow our minds in terms of provability, because after all, how many people even in NASA saw the man go on the moon? They saw a space shuttle go up, but a lot of space shuttles have gone up and gone down. So you could argue on it. I'm not saying that I think it didn't happen. I actually think maybe it did happen. I don't care. So I don't. No one's asking me to put down $1 million whether it happened, so I momish don't care. Either it happened or it didn't. I assume it happened. Why not? But if it, but if somebody would devote their lives to Neil Armstrong going on the moon, then they would really, they should really have to do a lot more research, especially if they're going to devote their life to such a thing. I mean, let's say they're going to, they're going to be the president of the Neil Armstrong fan club and make they believe that Neil Armstrong's underrated and that he's off the map. They're going to make t-shirts and flags and spend their whole life on it. I think they should really research this a little bit before they do that. Because they're less adim. They're less actual testimonies. And that's the way it works with anything. If there's less testimony, then there's a, then there's more of a possibility of it have not happening. And that's accepted in the world. That's a secular point that the Sefer HaChinuch is saying right now. It's so accepted to use testimony that they will use capital punishment in countries just based on two or three Edim. And our Torah did that as well. Again, the reason I'm pointing out this nuance, and our Torah, who are we talking to over here? We're talking to Jews and our Torah. But again, whenever you are talking about proof of something, you have to think from a secular perspective, or else that's not speaking the language of proof. Proof is to try to be objective. And this is also how history is created. History is created through testimony. How do we have history books? Through testimony. Things happened in their father's and grandfather's time. And the more documents you have about this, the more, in Oklahoma, you find a text about George Washington. And in Trenton, New Jersey, you find a text. And in Rhode Island, I mean, it's all over the place. Everybody from anywhere. That was the president of the United States. There's nothing to talk about. Case closed. By the way, I'll just put in here something interesting that can happen in history. And this is an important point. that in general, history books, I believe the Kuzari makes mention of this point too, history books in general have a certain problem to them. And that's why you have to get sources from different countries about things. Let's say you're looking for the history of Rome, right? So you want to know where Rome conquered, where Rome didn't conquer, and how it happened. If you only have the books of Romans, then you're building something based on a picture that is clearly they're wanting to create a certain image of Rome. So now who was looking at these? If these were the newspapers of the time, then of course the way the government releases things, especially in those times, is with it's totally skewed towards one side. So if you would want to build an objective picture, you would have to find sources from all different people and even enemies of each other, and somehow be able to clue in to what is exactly real history and what is not. And this is the fascinating thing that separates the Torah from other history books of early time, is the Torah speaks critically of Klal Yisrael, speaks critically of Moshe Rabbeinu, speaks critically of of David HaMelech. So now politically, that's a very big no-no. If you don't write a history book where you discuss Nathan HaNavi rebuking the king, you don't discuss the first leader of the Jewish people. You know, if he, who cares if he hit that rock or talked to the rock? What ice of the water came out? You know, look how great our leader is. My son likes to keep up with world history, and this North Korean leader who no one's really, I don't know if they are sure what happened to him, not sure, I don't know. My son keeps me in, clued into these things. But they're like, create a certain image about him, like he's some sort of Avodah Zarah over there. And they totally control the news, and they want to make him like some sort of deity. That's the way they do things. And that's the way, really, it should be done if you want to control your nation. The worst thing to do in a history book is show fallibility of leaders. Because then you will lose the leadership. And here in the Torah, it's fascinating because it's the Dvar Hashem. The way it works is that Hashem's the leader. So therefore, it's not about people following Moshe Rabbeinu. It's about people following Hashem. And if Moshe Rabbeinu did not follow Ratzon Hashem to the T, then even in his own generation, there was a Sefer Torah in Arvas Moav, 40 years at the end of Arvas Moav, like we their stay in the Midbar, the Torah was written already, which means already by the end of that 40-year period, Moshe Rabbeinu himself wrote the Sefer Torah about him not being allowed to go into the land, right? Which certainly, if you're building a religion, this is not a wise thing to do. Everybody was going Moshe crazy, and now he's not even allowed to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Very anticlimactic to write such a thing. But the answer is, when you're writing the Dvar Hashem, that's how it goes. So we are talking about testimonies, but you have to be careful what's considered a testimony and what's considered journalism or history with an agenda of a government or a particular group. But that being said, there is this concept of testimony. And we're going to see next time, hopefully, Be'ezus Hashem, more on this topic. Let's see if we could do a little bit more. Al-Kain, Kishiratza Elokim Laseis Torah L'Amo Yisrael. When Hashem wanted to give the Torah to Klal Yisrael, right? So what did Hashem do? He gave it in front of the eyes of 600,000 mature adults, milvad taf v'nashim, aside from women and children, which there were millions, liyos kulam edim ne'amanim al advarim, so that they could witness it. Gam lamantia edus yoser chazak v'ne'amanu zachu kulam l'mayla senavua. We're going to talk about this next time. There's a fundamental difference between seeing something with your eyes and seeing something with prophecy, and that's a major difference. I'd like to just end today with this basic idea that first we're talking about an eyewitness. An eyewitness is external, meaning at the end of the day, even though eyewitness accounts are impressive, but there could be sleight of hand. I mean, that's the whole idea of magic, is really fooling eyes. So now the Sefer Achino is going to talk about how to establish something in an absolute way. On the one hand, the world accepts eyewitnesses. On the other hand, we're seeing more and more that there could be fake news. Over Bein Hazmanim, I went to a museum of technology, and they show you fake news. You know, they were showing a picture of Obama and his mouth and all the expressions. They could take millions of words that Obama's ever used with his mouth, with even the curve on his lips, and they can get him to say whatever he wants. So those, in theory, could be eyewitnesses. And even if you saw the man, maybe he's a stunt double, and maybe there's some sleight of hand. The greatest magicians in the world were able to do things in front of stadiums of people. So you could have 90,000 people in a stadium and do a magic trick. In theory, you have 90,000 people who are witnessing something, and that's not absolute absolute edus. So on the one hand, the Sefer HaChinuch starts by building the idea of testimony. But he's going to, next time, stay tuned, where we're going to discuss this flaw. Testimony itself is not enough because it's watching from the outside. Anytime you're watching something, you're essentially out of it. And we're going to learn next week that prophecy is where you see something from the inside. It's an experience that unfortunately none of us have ever had. I've never had it. You've never had it. None of us have had prophecy. However, the way prophecy works is you actually experience something from the inside, which we'll talk about more next week. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.